It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
Welcome back to The Next Room. It's always a good day when I can step out in the studio and speak with intriguing people that have remarkable backgrounds in the death and dying community. I met Wilka through the Beautiful Dying Expo, and it didn't take long for me to say, oh my gosh, this woman, she's a young woman, and her resume is about the length of 15 arms. Her name is Wilka Roig. You can go to wilkaroig.com to find out all about her. She's president of the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Foundation, Central Mexico. She's a transpersonal psychologist. She's a professional dream worker, which I'm very excited to talk to her about. She's an end-of-life doula, an ordained interfaith minister, and many, many more. I mean, she's an artist. There are just millions of things that this fascinating woman does for a living. And we're so happy to have her part of the Beautiful Dying Expo. Welcome to the show, Wilka.
Thank you, Jane. It's so wonderful to be here with you today.
I'm glad to have you here. I mean, I'm looking through your website, Wilka. I don't even know where to start because it is super fun and really, really creative. And there's beautiful artwork everywhere. And everything on your site speaks to my soul. So let's talk first and foremost about your work with the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Foundation, because it's an extraordinary organization. Tell me about your work with them.
Okay, well, I have two roles with their foundation now. One is with the parent foundation based in Arizona. It's the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Foundation Global, which was started by Elizabeth and is headed by her son, Ken. And with them, I am part of their education department. I am the deputy director of education. And so we are developing education programs that have a global reach. And we are, of course, covering all of the different topics that are part of Elizabeth's vast legacy. And so I'm very excited about that. And then in Mexico, I have been working to bring awareness of the value and necessity for compassionate accompaniment with loss, grief, and end of life. And I have developed a program called Compassionate Accompaniment that is for what we call life, death, and transition doulas, because the accompaniment is not just for end of life, but for all transitions. And we are also, there's a couple of things that are very important to us here in Central Mexico. One is to reclaim the traditions that come from our ancestors that have to do with accompaniment, both in birth and death, and to bring greater awareness and a place for those people who have been holding those traditions for centuries. So through the work of accompaniment, we are sort of creating a quote-unquote valid, you know, in this level of society and civilization for something that has been done forever. And bringing that into whatever we know today of all the advancements we've had in, you know, medicine and hospice and palliative care and all of that. So bridging those and creating something hopefully greater. Another thing that we are doing is that we are focusing on working with birth doulas and training them to be compassionate companions through loss, grief, and end of life, because with giving birth, we also are giving death. And sometimes that death comes a bit much sooner than expected. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and in Mexico, we have a very strong and empowered tradition of birth midwives. We have schools of midwifery, and it's a very, very respected role in our society, whereas the accompaniment for end of life is in the shadows and, you know, it's in the realm of the occult even.
Wow.
So we're trying to bridge that, and we are trying to connect both because they're so related. So that's a big project that we are embarking on. And then the other thing that we are really passionate about is another way of reclaiming our ancestral traditions is the green burial. Because, of course, before everything that we know today and before colonization, we were doing green burial and we're doing, you know, green practices for, you know, handling our dying and our dead and after death care. So what we are trying to do is to develop a replicable model for establishing green cemeteries or some form of green burial in communities, so that any community who would like to do that and run it, we just coach them through it, give them the, you know, sort of the blueprint, and they can just do it. So I think our goal in general is that whatever we do, we can just spread as many seeds and hopefully have them all start to grow quickly and cover a lot of, so that we can have a greater outreach and also that we can contribute to the evolution of our lost grief and end-of-life culture.
Okay. What drew you to this line of work? I mean, you are remarkably educated. You have so many fingers in so many things. What? Mm-hmm. When did this all start for you?
Well, the way I look at it, of course, everything is the preparation for the next thing, and it all starts with probably before our conception,
mm-hmm.
right? So the trajectory of my life from conception forward has led me in a very unique path filled with, you know, trauma, abuse, a very dramatic accidental loss and freak losses. And somehow my temperament, personality, I don't even know what it was, my soul, my spirit, I have no idea. Whatever it was, always led me toward understanding and delving deeper into and finding a way to not just survive, but to thrive with the motivation of being a model to others and, you know, supporting others. So this has been part of my nature, I think, from the beginning.
Hmm.
I think that my first big initiation happened, you know, there are many, but one of the main ones that I identify in this particular line of work has to do with the loss of a friend when I was a teenager and how that impacted my community and me personally. And something that I love to speak of is the supernatural, unexplicable that occurs around loss, grief, and end of life. And this is connected to my dream work as well and symbolic language, all these things that I am fascinated by and passionate about. And so one of my first experiences that I'm fully aware of is this one where, through dreams and visions, my dead friend guided me in supporting the grief process of his mother.
Mm.
And the experience was so mind-blowing because I was receiving information that I had no idea about. I didn't even know his mother. And he, you know, his promptings guided me to do all these things. And so he was my first teacher.
Wow.
In grief work.
I love that.
So that left a big mark. And it was at that time that I had the privilege of working at a bookstore and receiving all the books that were, you know, in inventory and opening the boxes and pulling out the books. And so I was able to see books of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and Stephen Levine and Thich Nhat Hanh, who were my first teachers in death work, you know, in terms of, you know, people who were already doing that out in the world. So I was exposed to all of that because that's how life had it be. And, you know, I went into psychology, and I then sort of veered into art because it's another passion of mine. And then working as a professor in art, I realized that I had it all backwards, that I should be a psychologist using art as a tool.
Mm.
Because all of my students were spending more time in after hours and office hours trying to understand, you know, their human experience and their, you know, whatever they were going through, and you know, I was more a therapist than an art teacher. So I went back to school and then studied psychology, you know, I did a master's in psychology. And then in the work that I started to do as I was working with clients, I realized that the work of life is the work of end of life and that they were connected. So that led me on the path to pursue, you know, I thought if there are birth midwives, there must be death midwives. If there aren't, there should be. So I started researching and found, I mean, this was way before we were really talking about this. I'm so happy that now it's a topic of conversation, really, and it's showing up everywhere now. But back when I was looking for it, there were maybe 5 hits on Google, you know? And I was able to begin to see what was happening, and then I eventually got trained with several of the people who were available then to learn more about death. That's kind of the short story.
I love it. I'm just sitting here just fascinated by your journey, and I absolutely love that you felt that you were guided through your friend who had crossed over to help his grieving mother. Did I get that right?
That's right, yeah.
Wow, that's beautiful. Let's circle back to the professional dream worker and how that plays into us and what we know of our life now and crossing over. Does it help? Is it in the dream working with grief? How does this work exactly?
Okay, yeah, this is a great question that I love. I mean, this is my greatest passion, connecting these two, right?
So, okay.
So, you know, this has come through a lot of work and a lot of experience with dreams, my dreams and the dreams of many others that I've facilitated individually and in circles, and I've worked with international dream circles I've facilitated online way before it was the thing to work online. And so I've observed many patterns and many ways in which dreams show up to guide us through whatever we are going through, right? And to guide us through the lessons, you know, the experiences that become the lessons, and then to yield whatever we are learning from it and put it into practice. So the way that I have observed it is that dreams are, on the one hand, keeping track of our growth in all aspects of being, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, and they are sort of reporting about our condition and our progress in all of those areas of life. And if we look at it just from the point of view of grief and end of life, there are dreams that prepare us for what's coming even when we don't know it consciously. And there are dreams that are helping us to practice that so that we are prepared. There are dreams that guide us in whatever is the work that we need to do in order to be prepared for a transition or for end of life. What really, really, how shall I say it? What really, there's an expression in English that I can't remember right now, but what made this point so clear to me is that it happened with several of my psychology clients who brought dreams to the sessions. And the dreams were so blatantly discussing issues that needed, or bringing up issues that needed to be explored and given some form of resolution to. And then eventually in these particular cases, very unrelated cases, the dream work really not only guided the end-of-life work that they weren't aware it was end-of-life, neither was I, but they also were, you know, were just guiding us through it and then reflecting the progress until the point at which these clients, different times, different cases, everything, would say, you know, I really feel complete. I feel like we've done the work, what I came to do in this therapy. I feel very light and like I've resolved everything. I'm at peace with my life. I'm ready to just enjoy myself, you know? And there were several cases when, at that point, we had a termination session, which we always do to give closure and really recapitulate everything that we went through and all the progress we made and everything. And we had beautiful farewells and exchange of gifts and gratitude. And in various cases, these clients ended up dead a few days later.
Oh, my.
Different situations where it was completely unexpected, or it was accidental, or, you know, there was nothing that could have predicted. Nobody could have expected it. But the psyche knew it.
Hmm.
And these people were perfectly prepared. They had done the entire work of end of life. And to me, that was a pivotal point in my in how I was working and what I was thinking about my work, and it completely changed my perspective to understand that there is an unconscious process that is going on that we can engage consciously and work with intentionally, or that we can trust is doing its work anyway, right? But it's more fun when we pay attention. And that there is something that is constantly preparing us and guiding us through our cycles of growth, and one of those cycles of growth ends in our death, right?
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, and so it works with grief the same, you know, but the thing that I love about thinking about dreams and grief is a little different. When we work with dreams, we get used to relating to an aspect, an intangible aspect of our experience, and we're working with our consciousness in a different way than we're used to when we're just grounded in this waking life. So when we are working, when we get used to working with dreams, we understand that there's really no difference between my memory of what I had for breakfast and my memory of a dream. Right?
Okay.
In this moment, we have no evidence except for maybe dirty dishes in the sink that we had an experience this morning. There is more evidence because our life is tangible and very dense here when we're awake.
Mm-hmm.
But our memories and our dreams are of the same. They are in the same wherever that is, right?
Okay.
So there's a way in which our work, this is kind of complicated, but the way we work with our dreams is also the way we can work with our grief. And this is way too complicated to talk about right now, but there's just a lot that we can gain from engaging our dreams, paying attention to them, and allowing ourselves to be guided by them.
Oh, yeah.
To me, they hold that pattern of growth until the end.
You know, I'm a big fan. I mean, in my, I'm a very, I guess, like a lucid dreamer. I dream a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I remember everything. I write everything down. But I've had dreams, and then I've actually had visitations. And to mm-hmm. me, there seems to be quite a big difference.
Absolutely.
I mean, dreams just seem to, well, they just seem to fade where, you know, I had a visitation shortly after my mother passed, and I can tell you to this day exactly what it looked like, where I was, how I felt, what she looked like, the thoughts I was having as I was having the dream, and I knew that she was on the other side while I was having this visitation or this dream. And we were communicating, but we were communicating telepathically. She didn't speak a word. Mm-hmm. And it's
yeah.
just fascinating to me. Dreams yeah. are fascinating. So what a cool thing to work with interpretation in this professional dream work and help, you know, help people to kind of come to terms with what's going on with them passing through to the other side.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and I will just say that yes, there's a very different quality to dreaming about someone versus being visited by someone, and the difference is very palpable, as you described, for sure.
Yeah, it's so cool. Unbelievable. So, you work as a professional dream worker. So, when someone comes to you, and they say, what is this creative dream work thing? What are you doing? How can you help a family with this dream work? What would you just say to them, like a little elevator pitch on how dream work can help them with dying?
Yeah. Well, I'm really bad at elevator pitches, by the way.
But, sorry about that.
But, you know, what I would say is that, you know, there's a way in which we have a greater capacity or perception than we are aware of, and that when we work with dreams and symbols and synchronicities and waking dreams, we become more sensitive to information that is available to us and that helps to guide us through all of the different experiences in our lives. And so if someone is interested in using dreams or using symbolic language or using the imaginal, because some people might say, well, I don't remember my dreams, or I don't dream, which is not possible, but we don't remember our dreams. There are so many different ways in which this other realm, whatever that is, communicates with us and informs us. So we look at a variety of ways in which we can connect to that. And if we're working with a grieving family, I will ask, are you having dreams here? Are you remembering your dreams? What is happening? But also, I think it's an exercise to expand their awareness with life and become more receptive to synchronicities that would carry the same information as a remembered dream. So mm-hmm. we don't have to actually remember our dreams to benefit from dream work, which is what the creative aspect of it has to do with.
Okay. Do you find that individuals are getting to be more open to talking about other realms?
No, actually, I have to take that back, because I, within my circles and within anywhere I go and in anything I do, I incite that. Hopefully I'm inspiring people to open up about those things rather than inciting it. You know what I mean? So,
yes.
So it's hard for me to be objective about whether more people in general are open to it.
Sure.
But I suspect so, in the same way that people are more open about talking about death.
Exactly.
You know, I think that we are searching for other ways to explain our experience. We are searching for other ways to support ourselves through our experiences, and especially in the last couple of years, right? I think a lot has changed us, and perhaps we're more open to different or new ways of considering what's happening or why it's happening.
Right. That was kind of a question for me, because I'm completely fascinated. I mean, I richly love this life, but I also am very fascinated about what comes next, thus the next room. What do you feel, or what, like you said, you don't know, obviously none of us know, really know, truly know, until we do cross. What do you hope or think or feel is in that next room for you?
Okay. An angle, but to answer your question, but I know for sure, right?
Sorry, we just had a little communication riff there. Can you go ahead and repeat that?
Okay,
go ahead.
Sure. Are you able to hear me okay?
Yes, you sound good now.
Okay. So that I will look at it from a different angle to speak to what I know is true based on my experience, which may not be true for everyone.
Okay.
But true for me. So what I know for sure, for example, is that people die, and they, who or what about them, I can't tell you. Where they might be or not, I can't tell you, but that they communicate with us, yes. I know that for sure.
Mm.
Because I have been guided by the unknown so many times now. I channel words and things that I would never conceive of with grieving patient or grieving clients, with, you know, people I work with. Where it's coming from, I don't know, but my clients tell me it's their dead family member,
mm-hmm.
right? And so for me, I don't know, like I said, I don't know the form of it, I don't know where it is, I don't know anything about that. I couldn't tell you what is the afterlife like, or look like, or feel like, or anything, but there's definitely a communication with something about those whom we knew and loved.
Mm-hmm.
Who have died, so who don't have a physical body. I think that, I mean, I guess what I have conceived, which, you know, is my own little musing, is that in the same way that when we dream, we are in this formless and super shifting reality that includes all possibilities, right?
Mm-hmm.
To be and do anything or be anyone, you know, past, present, future, other realms, other planets, I don't even know, things that we could never even begin to imagine are possible in dreams. I can only imagine that if that is like the huge soup of all possibilities for the, you know, and so if you imagine that, like the universe, as, you know, this entire wholeness, and then we are like the tiny tip of a funnel through which only one drop of that can come through, and that's what is our human perception and experience, our individual human, perception and experience, then I can only imagine that the reverse would happen with death. You know, we are born into something very, very specific, and then in death we would be free from that very specific thing and go back into whatever that is. But that's a total musing of mine that has no concrete foundation except for my sensations based on the work that I do.
I love it. You're my kind of gal, I got to tell you. Wilka Roig is my guest today. If you're fascinated like I am, I urge you to go to her website. It is Wilka, WILKAROIG.com. And I'll put a link on the show page to all of the things that we're talking about. Wilka is the president of the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Foundation in Central Mexico. She's a transpersonal psychologist, professional dream worker, end-of-life doula, ordained minister, artist, and a dream weaver, and really a fascinating woman. Wilka, you're going to be involved with the Beautiful Dying Expo, and I'm just thrilled that you've come on board. This is my third year with the Beautiful Dying Expo, and now they have officially made my podcast the official podcast, and I'm going to broadcast live from the event. So please carve out some time for me, and we'll get you scheduled during the Beautiful Dying Expo, which is coming up the second week of November 2021. Pop into my booth and we'll talk more about this, because we'll be on Zoom and we can welcome other people in the booth and really have a spirited chat about all of these topics.
That sounds wonderful.
Love to have you come by. So let's talk about, is there something we didn't touch on? I mean, you have so many things that you do. Do you want to talk about death cafes, or I noticed here you do dark night retreats, you do creative dream work retreats and workshops. Is there something you'd love to touch on that we haven't talked about yet?
Oh dear. I don't know. I love to talk about all of those things, but I guess I'll just take a moment to say that opportunities such as this, listening to podcasts like this, going to the Beautiful Dying Expo, going to death cafes, finding ways to create the safe spaces to have these conversations is essential. As a human need, really, it's essential, and it's especially imperative now after everything we've gone through and where we were going through globally.
Right.
So I'll say that. But I think the more that we can bear to go to these communities and have these conversations, and the more that we invite others to do the same, I think we're doing a great service.
I think that's beautifully said, and I could not agree more. Wilka Roig is my guest. It's wilkaroig.com. Just a really amazing woman, and really does know so much about this other fabulous side of things, and just kind of the exploration of what it is to work with people personally and try to help them with their grief and to see them through and to let them know that, you know, it's nothing but love, in my estimation, when we do finally exit from here and move on. Wilka, thank you so much for coming on The Next Room. I'm just so happy to have you. The Beautiful Dying Expo is coming up in November, and love you to join us there. I'll put a link to the Beautiful Dying Expo as well. And that is going to be chock full of all kinds of fascinating professionals like Wilka herself, coming up November 2021. I think it's 12, 13, 14 are the dates. something.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's my birthday weekend.
Oh, good. We'll celebrate. Well, I look forward to having you back on the next room and come and we can get really in depth and bring your cards with you or anything that you want because we'll have visuals because we'll be on Zoom. So I really appreciate you taking the time today, Welka.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Jane. I look forward to continuing to converse with you and work with you.
Thanks so much for tuning in to The Next Room. I'll catch you next week.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to The Next Room.